So this is a wonderful question about more, we can call it stages of sadhana. So at one point of time I had used these terms, which still I connect, so but it's like a little bit of rhythm or a poetic touch in it. For instance, the first stage is the womb stage, when the sadhana is not actively begun, but something is stirring inside. When there is an attraction, one is drawn towards a philosophy, one likes to read, one sometimes likes to associate, that is a time of search. Before that, there is not even the conception. So before that, it's a mass collective progress, so one is progressing, subconscious yoga. But there is a stage when between the subconscious yoga and the conscious yoga, when the search starts. So this is the first stage. So that's the time one can read, and one should read things, go to different places. All this is happening. It's the womb stage, when you are being prepared by the great world mother. And we begin to, then the heartbeat, then there is a pressure. Then the time comes when we, the next stage is when the baby in the womb wants to come out. It's almost on the verge of now making a choice. This is the path. And during that time, it goes through a stifling feeling. That's the labor pains. Usually, just before you get onto the path you are meant to walk, as Sri Aurobindo says, a supernatural darkness falls sometimes on man when our soul draws near to God. Now, this doesn't mean that outward circumstances would be terrible. They may or may not be, but inwardly you feel stifled. You feel stifled with the ways of the world. You don't really can, as long as we are happy and satisfied with the world as it is, actually we cannot undertake yoga. It is only when we are no more satisfied with the way the world it is. See, this is true vairagya. Vairagya is not an outer act. When we have seen the world, understood it, and seen through it, and understood that this cannot satisfy my being, my soul, that's the time that turning takes place. So this is the second stage. We can call it as an initiation. The baby is just born. Cries. That cry of the baby is the initiation. Cries for mama and milk. So symbolically it is what? Ma is the divine mother and milk is knowledge. So it aspires. So aspiration is born. It's a very beautiful stage. The baby. So I've used the word comb stage. So beautifully every you are looked after, you know, that stage when the psychic is fully effulgent and you are. And if you really take advantage, you'll end up discovering the psychic being very fast, because that's the stage which is facilitating it. The divine doesn't want us to straight away jump into the problems and challenges of nature. That's the stage. Focus on the psychic. Don't get into, I have this difficulty. Some people get into unnatural struggle with their nature, too premature. That's a stage when search for the psychic. That's it. One pointed. There are difficulties in nature. There are difficulties in nature, and of course one must work upon it. But that should not be the focus. Especially some people start with the worst difficulty. Keep pressing towards the soul. So that's the stage when, and you have all the things supporting this inward movement. When one has gone inside, found the soul, you know you are not this nature. Then the third stage is when you, the limits within which our nature is moving, that begins to widen and open up. That's the stage which is called as spiritualization. What it means is that now you have found who you are not this ego entity, but now nature starts to, under the pressure of this soul, it begins to open up. Many people think this opening is above and it is only about the higher beautiful experiences. Yes, but Sri Aurobindo reminds us, higher you climb, the deeper you go inside also. Have you ever seen a torch light? When it goes, it's like a whole circle. Inevitable. It's always a movement like that. So you discover beautiful experiences, and now you are ready to handle something more of the nature even below. So the upward opening and the difficulty below, you begin to tackle more and more. Also because of this new light, you begin to see in yourself. the defects that till now we were seeing in others. So we begin to see. That's when the working on nature starts. Now again in nature, when the working starts, there are several stages, but particularly we see there are three main stages. First stage is those elements of nature open up, which are, you know, easy to open, which are receptive. For instance, in some people the heart will open and bhakti will emerge. Some people the mind will open and they will have flashes of intuitions, inspirations. In some people the will open and you engage in works. So there are parts of nature which are ready. They open up, become receptive, and again in nature you will see new possibilities emerging. In some people the faculty of painting, drawing, music, writing, all this will open up. Then the next stage is, after this is done, see the way it's unimaginable the way the wisdom works. Next stage is when there are parts which are not so ready, but under the influence of these they are getting ready. So you'll see that they begin to open up. They are becoming ripe. And it's a little longer. They resist, but eventually they also, you know, fall in line. The third stage is when the subconscient and the inconscient, the darkest depths. But before that, now some people try to, this has to be done. They plunge into it. Shubhendu says, don't do it. It will happen inevitably. So our whole attention should be on higher and higher. As he says, God with one hand keeps you below and the other lifts you up. We must be with God with the upper hand. But it is he only who is also showing us that part. So subconscious means all the habits, atavisms of nature, the worst kind of things that were buried inside, they will start coming up. And that is the last battle. The battle of Vritrasura, as it is described in the Puranas, and Indra. So Vritrasura is shown as a giant snake, python, which seizes a whole city and submerges it underwater. And then eventually Indra with his thunderbolt, it is all taken care of. But it's the last stage, very difficult stage, because the habit will cling, return. So what is needed during this phase is faith, endurance, surrender, never to give up. To know that the divine is with us, not to judge yourself, because if you judge yourself, you will not open and offer. In fact, then there will be thoughts of unfitness, I am a bad person. This is what these forces want, all the subconscious forces. They will say, you are not fit for yoga. See, this is the dirt inside you. So that time we have to say, yes, the dirt is in universal nature. I have my own share of it. Don't try to walk among the holies. But Ma, this too is yours. Transmute this dust into golden dust. So she will give that touch and you'll see the clutch of subconscious becoming weaker and weaker. And even things which we had never ever imagined, they start getting transmuted, because they too hold within them a divine possibility. Each part in us desires its absolute. Meanwhile, as the lower vital, where the real struggle comes, and the subconscious, this is what I was talking about, in this immediate stage, they get touched by the light, the resistances come up. That's when the working on the body also starts, because it's very closely connected to the body. All the life force feeders of the body are mainly coming from there. Body is subject to atavism, habits. So then what will happen is, all these tendencies, particularly three things. One is food, directly connected with the body. Sleep, lot of sleep disturbances at that point of time. And of course, sexual desire. These are very intimately connected with the biology. Though ambition stands very close next, but fears, again deeply connected to matter. All this begins to emerge in nature, and they have to be it's a struggle. Now, just imagine when people start struggling with these forces in the beginning, what happens? Because that's the time you are entering into the den of the subconscious without really being ready. So, but a time will come when these forces will, they become active. And then if one is open, psychic impulsion, the spiritual consciousness, the higher consciousness, most important, surrender to the mother, those are times when it is best to be near the, you know, place like the ashram. Otherwise, in many people, this stage will not come because it's too dangerous. That's why Shubhendu said that this yoga is too dangerous. Because in traditional yoga, what do you do with these things? You don't work on nature. So you have a sattu sansuddhi, yama, niyama, and you are a sattvic person. So you never really look into these parts. In fact, you deny it. They are somebody else's problem. And that's the example I give is, you clean your house and put the dust outside your house, or not only outside your house, next door neighbor. There is a little gap, no, between your house and the next door neighbor. You put it there. Whose dust is it? So the neighbor will say, not mine. You'll say, not mine. I don't know who has put it. Now that's what we have been doing so far. But in this yoga, it doesn't matter where it came from, because your consciousness by this stage becomes very vast. You have no scope of blaming anyone, because you discover it's not your nature, my nature, but universal nature. And those who have taken to this yoga seriously, or chosen or picked up, they become representatives of a certain difficulty. That's when, if you have a certain difficulty of nature, you can't even say, oh, it's not mine actually, you know, it came from somebody. It's now come into, it's never anybody's, it's nature. But it has entered into your awareness, you have to offer and change it. That's it. It's no more somebody else's headache. You can't blame anyone. That blaming, complaining stage is even before starting yoga. As Shubhendu said, no, that the Semites often blamed women and told that they are the cause of fall of men. So he says, I think more wisely and kindly, both of women. And he says that whose fault is it? It is your fault. It's not a woman's fault. And then he says, I think more wisely of the one who has made this world. So this is a very dangerous approach people took. And so they started shunning, putting, you know, there's a whole group which is very famous, very rich, you know, spiritual movement or whatever it is. They don't see, the Swamijis don't see women. They are called as Brahmagyanis. I had an occasion to share a platform and they introduced Brahmagyani and all. Next was my talk. So I said, I am surprised that when half the Brahman is in darkness. Because that's how it is. So even in the talk, women are supposed to sit behind. Why? Because they can lure men. Now all this is absurd. Yeah. I mean, it happens when you have a sannyasi, but somebody had come here and this is what happened. He was supposed to be in the Himalayas and people said, oh, what a good meditation he does. Mother just smiled. One day he went to meditate in playground and he could meditate. He was standing like this, hands folded, shivering. And kya hua aapko? Kaise meditate karenge? How I will meditate? There are girls wearing half pants. He couldn't. Now that's it. This is not a justification that we should wear whatever we wish to. But it's about that your mind and senses have deviated far. So it's all kept behind. But in this yoga, time comes. And that stage I call as the bomb stage. When the entire nature is all sky and God. It's so vast, the consciousness becomes universal consciousness. The limitations of the ego are gone. Everybody's problem is your problem, if you want to put it like that. And if you bring a change within you, that has an effect on everybody. That's why Mother says, win your little victories, because the more you win within you, it will have an automatic effect on everybody around. So these are the stages. And of course, as I said, each time you go down, actually you climb back to greater height. It's described in Savitri. Because something more has been cleared, a heaviness which was holding you back. And each time you go to a greater height, now you can enter into a still deeper plunge. So that is what is called as the waxing and waning, the seesaw, the darkness and light nurturing the divine child, as the Vedic Rishi said, night and day, till we enter the everlasting day, when all is beauty, all is wonder, and all is light, and all is bliss. Namaste. So we spoke about the different stages of sadhana so far. We had put it in this way, that womb stage when something has begun but we are not fully aware of it. So this stage is when people feel some kind of a seeking, some search. It is very vague. Even some kind of, they start questioning, they read from here and there. All kinds of things. One can see that there is a groping which has begun. At the same time, there is a sense of stifling, because it's just like in the womb, as the baby grows up, its need for a greater space comes up. So as the soul within us tends to become a little more awake or is beginning to wake up, the ego personality begins to feel stifling, because the soul is capable of soaring in the widest worlds beyond. So this sense of stifling of the ego, it's itself is a long journey, is a sign that there is a time when there will be a new birth and a new journey will begin. The new birth is initiation. So we have the womb stage where sadhana is going on unconsciously. This is just a way of saying, nobody has written or said it somewhere. It's just my way of putting it across. So please don't make a dogma out of it. And then there is the comb stage when the psychic is born. It's a very beautiful stage in sadhana when everything is wonderful, because first time the psychic has felt the shock of the divine. So people often ask that how to know who is the right guru. It's not like how you can't know it mentally. But when you come to the master who is meant to lead you, and this is irrespective of anything, the psychic within us gets a shock. The shock is because suddenly it realizes that he is the one through which I have to go. This is a recognition by the psychic. And it has nothing to do with any of the mental yardsticks. The mind may say, but he is, he doesn't... it may see the whole thing very superficially. Like it may be impressed by the looks of somebody or the philosophy of someone. But the psychic knows through a kind of inner contact, and thereby it feels within it that here is the divine who is meant to lead him. Now, this we must be very careful, that if we try to say that the one who has come to us, meant to lead us, is the only one, that's when we begin to form cults. Cults are formed when we take away that infinity of the divine, that freedom of the divine, and we start saying that the guru who has come to me is the only guru, he is, and all others are fake, or all others are not true. Of course, there are fake gurus in the sense that people are not realized. To be a guru needs a mandate. It cannot be just that, any person can be a guru. Now, all that we have already spoken of. More importantly, however, it is important to recognize that the person through whom we feel that kind of inner contact with the divine, regardless of his or her achievements, still, if we have felt it like that, then the divine leads us through that person. Now, this is something very amazing and very wonderful. Shubhendu speaks of it in the synthesis. And it's not about that person's, how good the person is, or that person may not be at all a realized person. Yet, if the soul feels, so divine's play, we cannot limit in this way or that way. The moment we try to limit, we form a cult, that this path, this method, this person, he's the only one. That's how cults are formed. Now, cult is one part. Religion makes it, at least the formal religions, when cults, there can be many cults, many approaches. That's how in India, ancient India, things flourished, because there were many ashramas. When at one point, Mother and Shubhendu says that in the Vedic period, you didn't have these kind of fixed formal religions. If you look at the Vedic period, even temples, you'll hardly find that kind of thing. But mainly it was ashramas, gurukuls, where there were masters and disciples. So there were different masters with different degree of realizations. Disciples went there, they learned, they grew, they realized what they could. Some of them became masters, and that's how it continued. So spirituality has been transmitted like that. But later on, there was a tendency when the mind began to develop for whatever was the teaching to get crystallized into a fixed formal method. And that's when problem began. But even that was okay. The worst was when further down the line, people began to further crystallize it and say that my path is the only path and all other paths, that exclusivity which was born later on in some religions, at least two or three religions we know, which became very exclusive. Indic religions were never exclusive. Whether you take Hinduism or Sikhism or Jainism, Buddhism, they are not exclusive religions. Jainism, they all accept that there are many approaches to the divine. But religions outside the Indian soil, maybe because they were so few and far between, so the tendency was to become exclusive. And that was in a way the death knell of those religions. They almost died before they began, to put it a bit squarely maybe. But because in India you had the tendency of many fresh streams coming up, the masters coming up, new scriptures coming up, new visions coming up. So it continued to grow, because anything, things must grow organically. So in Sri Aurobindo's yoga also we see things growing organically. In the sense, it's not like a fixed and formal method that everybody, the moment you are initiated, is given a book and is given a method. It doesn't work like that. Sri Aurobindo's yoga is the closest which comes to Sanatana Dharma. So you are initiated, you have a call, you have an aspiration. And then you see in Mother and Sri Aurobindo that they are the masters leading you. But you never say that, you know, they are the only ones meant to lead the whole world and everybody must follow them. No, for me, they have come like this and I must be faithful to this calling. But at the same time, I must accept that there are different people with different needs and different approaches and different goals. Because even though, you know, we say in general yoga is about finding God, but we know that Mother and Sri Aurobindo's yoga is a highly specialized yoga. In a sense, all yoga is specialized. But in its goal, it is something which has been hinted in the Indian evolutionary understanding of yoga. But it has never been brought out so forcefully and powerfully as Sri Aurobindo does. So here the goal is not just finding God. Finding God is an important step. But the manifestation of the divine in our humanity, which makes it, you know, one notch beyond and one notch more difficult in its, you know, whole method. Meaning thereby that the whole yoga in this yoga is not only taking place in the ground of the soul, is taking place also in the ground of nature, because nature has to change. And that changes the character of the yoga. From the kum stage, we graduate to the bomb stage. So kum stage is when, you know, mothers comb a baby. So it's a beautiful stage when you are conscious of the Divine Mother fully and, you know, she is taking care of you. It's a psychic stage. There is a psychic glow. Everything is wonderful. And, you know, you feel that love, bhakti, shraddha spontaneously. Many people, even that is not easy to arrive at. But when you arrive at that stage, it's so wonderful. But the yoga doesn't stop there. A time comes when the yoga shakti, the force of yoga, begins to work in the fields of nature. And that's where we see that the third stage starts, where different parts of nature react very differently. So everybody has within one's nature parts which respond beautifully to the light. Then there are parts which slowly will respond, but they will respond. And there are parts which resist tooth and nail. So one caution that people must understand is that some people throw themselves into an unnatural fight with the resisting parts too early in the yoga. And Mother and Sri Aurobindo both caution against it. First, you must gather the army of light, which means to open more and more, to call for peace. 70-75% of effort should be in that direction. More peace, more light, more bhakti, more inner state of joy, more surrender. So once these things are established, then a time will come when the fight will take place. And that's when we see that the spiritual light begins to search every corner, every citadel of darkness. And all our, we normally live in a very neat idea of our nature. And all that is thrown apart. And we enter into a state where we realize there are things hidden inside. Not only in terms of movements of nature, but motives, hidden tendencies, all these things, they are brought to the surface. And that can be a very unnerving stage. One needs to go, have tremendous endurance, patience, perseverance, faith, aspiration, growing sincerity. and surrender, of course, to go through that stage. Because that stage may be, you know, it's like a prolonged stage. That sudden psychic opening comes sometime by the grace very early. And one can nurture it far more easier. But when this happens, that the working starts on nature, especially in the lower vital and the subconscious part, which is the repertoire of all the tendencies and resistances, then the battle can be very prolonged. Some people, give up. They go into depression. Sometimes people wonder that why somebody who has, been on the path so long, how can the person behave so crazily, or the person is going into depression? Well, it's because of that we have not nurtured the foundational, fundamental things of yoga. That's why Shobindu says that have the foundation in peace, equanimity, endurance, faith, surrender. If these are not there, because yoga experiences will start the moment the yoga shakti touches. But supposing one begins to have experience in the vital, a lot of visions and voices, and start thinking that, I am progressing on the yoga, but these foundations are not established. Initially, if you see, one of the first book of letters that came out from Sri Aurobindo's was Basis of Yoga, where he speaks about calm, peace, equanimity. Things like food, sleep, all these simple things. So that once the foundation is there, then one goes through this stage and doesn't give up. Otherwise, there are people who even I have seen who, enter into a state of despair, who say, there is no God, there is no, all this is waste, because they have entered that part of nature where the resistance is most profound. And because of that resistance, they don't realize. That's why it's so important to read Mother and Sri Aurobindo. When they have not really read, there are people who believe that, no, I'll know everything by intuition. Well, then Sri Aurobindo was, he didn't write all this to waste his time. But he wrote all this because as a master, he knows that people go through it. So when you see his letters, where he explains, however long the fight, you must persevere. How the mother writes, at the end of the tunnel there is victory. Persevere and you would conquer. Victory comes to the most persevering. So when you know it, and you know that these thought suggestions have to be rejected, you don't have to accept them, and you have to persevere, then the passage is much shorter and much quickly you come out of it. And through that passage you know there is the support, because you have truly learned how to surrender to the divine. So this is the third stage, which as I was saying, bomb stage, means everything that we called as our old nature is gone. The good and the bad both. We all have a nice impression about goodnesses within us. We all have our own idea of certain, weak spots within us. But what comes out is literally the good becomes better and the bad shows up its ugly head. Everybody goes through this. There's no exception. Sri Aurobindo and the mother's letters, if you see, everybody goes through it, and the memoirs of the sadhaks. Then what happens? Then the last stage of the yoga is the tomb stage. So it started from the womb, where the journey has started, and the tomb stage is when finally the ego is dead. And then it is buried. The old nature is dead. The old consciousness is dead. The way we used to take interest in old things, that is gone and dead. And more that place has been, ego has been dethroned, and that space has been occupied by God, by the Divine Mother. And that's the time we can start really creating the Mother symbol within us. Then the perfection begins, all the fourfold perfection with the Mother at the center. Then all the 12 beautiful qualities, not like they are either or, but eventually that is how, once the ego is dethroned, then we see more and more the working of the fourfold aspects of the Divine Mother. The mind begins to change into a luminous mind of light. Our vital, the strength aspect, changes into the strength of God, which can endure anything, which can fight a million battles without flinching. Love within the human heart begins to change into something very beautiful, full of sweetness, charm, joy, complete giving. And finally, in every act, in every thing that we undertake, we begin to develop that spontaneous skill, that eye for details, that knowledge about the details. All this happens spontaneously because of the workings of the Divine Mother. And then finally the outer nature undergoes the change. So that's when the ego is dead, and these are the stages of sadhana, not that they are exclusive. And again, when we start saying that, we are making a cult out of it in different people. Also because we must understand, this journey is not a journey of one life. So somebody who has realized certain things in previous life. When the person comes to this life, those previous realizations come very fast. And then the other stages, which are meant to be maybe the last stages, they begin very fast, much earlier, even including the physical transformation. Whereas there are others in which just the psychic realization takes a lifetime. So one should not give up. One must know that each one is on the unique journey. And it's not a competitive race. It's not an Olympic going on where, you know, the man who comes first get the gold medal. Here everybody gets the gold. So, but you got to reach to get it. But the gold is for everybody. And before getting the gold, you may get the silver, which is the spiritual consciousness. So you have the silver and the gold, spiritual consciousness, and then everybody graduates to the gold. It's not like somebody got it, now you can't get it. So this we must understand, that there is, and divine enjoys this uniqueness. So in Sri Aurobindo's yoga, there are no hard and fixed rules, even about the methods. That you have to do this, you have to practice so many hours of, you know, japa, or so many hours of meditation in this posture, pranayama, asana. You may do all of them and you need not do all of them. That's how Sri Aurobindo puts it. You may do it if you feel inclined from within, either because of the past sanskaras or because of, you know, our own unique nature, which may need these things. So we may do these things, and then a time comes when they drop off. And there's the same thing even about God. Some people would say that, you know, I used to worship Krishna before coming here. Now I feel a turning towards Sri Aurobindo. So it's perfectly fine. One can look at it like this, that Sri Krishna has taken us to Sri Aurobindo. So all this can happen because each nature is unique. The combination is very unique. We see in mother's life itself, Buddha is coming and telling her that as one who had loved me once. So these different experiences, different workings will happen. And that is why this yoga is not, there is no guru in this yoga except Mother and Sri Aurobindo. Because every human being, generalizations we can speak of. And sometimes you feel that you need and receive help from someone. That's a different matter altogether. But every person has had a unique journey. So if you ask such a person, he will give you that approach. But that approach may or may not be suited for you. So for somebody, he had left everything and come to the ashram. And you ask this person that, you know, how to do the yoga. The person may say, well, first you come to the ashram because yoga is done only here. To somebody else who has lived outside forever and done the yoga and had his own experiences, would say, well, you can do the yoga anywhere and everywhere. So this is not something where while help can come through anybody, but we must remember that only Mother and Sri Aurobindo are the guru of this yoga. Second very important thing, there are no fixed method. There is a tendency nowadays to crystallize. So there are people who teach about heart meditation and they say this is Sri Aurobindo's yoga. No, it's not as simple as that. Sri Aurobindo himself did not teach about heart meditation, not the mother. Okay, she said that, okay, concentrate in the heart. In one of the writings at some context, she spoke about dynamic meditation. She said heart has wings. But there is a reason why she did not give a fixed formal method. Because the moment you give a fixed formal method, then the mind creates formations. It's not something authentic. And the divine doesn't like artificiality. One of the beautiful things about creation and divine is every moment he is recreating this universe. Why is he doing it? Because he loves this. The moment you fix it, then things are gone. So, and especially in a thing like a new creation, which is a new adventure, which has never happened before. So the less fixed we keep things, a plasticity, a wideness, and growth of consciousness, which can take place through any event. So one may, people teach practices like meditative practices under the rubric of Sri Aurobindo's yoga. But very often Sri Aurobindo's yoga is taking place not when we are sitting in meditation, but when we are offline. Offline is online. Because we are that time interacting with people, their reactions, responses. That's where the yoga is taking place. In meditation, in fact, it's very easy. You can either go to sleep, or if you are a good meditator, you will have some sense of peace or something. But come out, that's the time your meditation is being tested. How you react, how you respond, how nature will... And in different people, it will respond differently. There is no fixed way here also. That no, when you somebody says something, you should be indifferent. To one person it is indifference. Another person, Swadharma, may be very different. Look at the way Champaklalji, Pranabda, Nalnida, Pavitrada, four great stalwarts. There are many others. Amrita. How they will respond to the same situation? Very differently. Because in this yoga, there is room for infinite variety because Shobindo brings us into contact with the infinite. So we must remember there is no one fixed way of doing the yoga. At the same time, if somebody says, no, this is not the way to do yoga, that is the way to do yoga, please don't listen. But there is a core fundamental truth about this yoga, from the womb to the tomb. And that is the Divine Mother. When we are in the womb, we are in the mother's womb. When the comb is being done, it is she. When everything in nature is going to smithereens, it is she, still watching over us. She is the one who is creating the mold of the new creation. And when the ego is dead, she is the one who builds a new nature, new mind, new life, new heart, new body for us. The one thing to be remembered, the central key of this yoga is the Divine Mother. And if you remember that, then everything is wonderful. If you forget that, we may do 101 practices or 108, sorry, practices, but they'll bring practically no result. Shobindra said that if somebody wants to try it, he can try it because supermind is available, accessible. They may try it, but it is more likely to land them in a horrible cropper. So this is where like Guru Bhakti in India, we may use the word Matra Bhakti. So surrender to the mother remains the mainstay of this yoga, and if somebody can have it, then the rest is a question of time. As Shobindo said, with that we can stop. All who are turned to the mother are doing the Purna Yoga. All who are turned to the mother are doing the Purna Yoga. Namaste.